This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
Welcome in. Happy Thursday, everybody. We are back. This is another episode of the Take It Easy radio show here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Thank you to everyone joining us here today, however and whenever it is that you are tuning in, either via 313 The Flash or here on Saturday on the Take It Easy Podcast Network. Thank you again for stopping in with us. It is Thursday, September 3rd, everybody. I am so appreciative of everyone taking time out of their day to join us here today. It is presently 1:01 on the West Coast, 4:01 on the East Coast. Thank you to everyone who's here today. Please subscribe and download and all the good stuff that I know you guys are doing. A lot has gone on since the last time we talked to you. The way I like to start these shows, because in the podcast world, I'm recording early in the morning. So something I like to do now is to just look at the world of sports going on as I can actually talk live. So Texas Rangers down 5-2 against the Houston Astros in the sixth inning. Live sports today, the Pirates are beating the first-place Cubs because, of course, the Pirates are beating the first-place Cubs. That's baseball for you, is that even the Pirates, the worst team in Major League Baseball, on track to get the number one pick in the draft, can still beat a first-place team any and every day. So there's also, by the way, before we get going, there's also warm-ups for the Yankees and the Mets series getting underway, and the Nationals and Phillies series getting underway here on a Thursday. That's actually a fun place to start. And even if you're listening on Saturday on the podcast feed, it is fun to talk about this Rays and Yankees situation where they, okay, so here's the context. For those of you who aren't super deep into baseball, and I wouldn't say I am either, I just happen to know a lot about baseball. This is the thing I always say. Baseball is the sport of my childhood. Hockey has the best playoffs. Football is the best sport to watch. Basketball is the best sport to talk about. College football is unique in its own sense, and I enjoy watching it on Saturdays. And March Madness is just a total euphoria. Golf, it's fun 4 weekends of the year. Other than that, not going to watch too much golf unless it's the magical Tiger versus Phil, the match that got 6 million desperate sports fans to watch bad golf during a pandemic. Well, also watch Tom Brady play golf. That's the other thing. So the Rays are a small market in baseball. For those who are familiar with football, it's less so that small markets exist, but you know that Buffalo is less desirable and Cincinnati is less desirable than going to play for the Saints or going to play for the Patriots or going to play for – actually, the Saints aren't a good example. They have one of the smallest markets in the league, New York. But basketball, baseball, it is so prominent, specifically college football, but they have another system of recruiting and turning over players. But specifically baseball and basketball, as well as hockey and football to a lesser degree, small market teams struggle to compete with big market teams. And the Tampa Bay Rays are one of the coolest stories in all of professional sports. They are by far the most innovative franchise in all of professional sports. Like, the Rockets put Russell Westbrook at center and shoot 57 threes a game. That's innovative. It's certainly, like, the Rays would have figured that out 10 years ago. Like, they are just totally finding new ways to innovate, new ways to find new players, new ways to compete at the levels, just to even the playing field with teams like the Yankees and Red Sox and Cubs and Dodgers, who can spend with virtually infinite resources. And in the case of the Red Sox, give bad contracts to Hanley Ramirez, Pablo Sandoval, J.D. Martinez, and Chris Sale, and Nathan Eovaldi, and still win a World Series. Now, it blows up once five bad contracts turns into 10, but the bottom line is the Rays don't have leeway for any bad contracts. And the Yankees have leeway for like three. It was Jacoby Ellsbury, now it's Giancarlo Stanton, soon it's going to be Gerrit Cole again, and the cycle just continues. This year, the Tampa Bay Rays have the best record in the American League with a team that has the second to lowest payroll in the American League. So they are number one in record, but number 14 in money spent out of 15 teams. And they are better than the Yankees so far this year. The Rays are on pace to get the number one seed when everyone, including myself, did an entire episode on this, said that the New York Yankees are by and large the best team in the American League. Now, what happened to the Yankees after we said that and after they were off to this amazing start was, so the Yankees have 9 All-Stars in their batting lineup alone. 9 All-Stars. And what happened was 2 of their relievers got hurt. Their All-Star second baseman, LeMahieu, got hurt. Stanton got hurt. Then Judge got hurt. Then Judge rehabbed. Then Judge had to go back on the IL. Now they don't know when Aaron Judge is going to be back. Aaron Hicks got hurt. Gary Sanchez got hurt. Gleyber Torres got hurt. Everything just piled up on the Yankees and Tampa Bay. Despite the fact Tampa Bay has lost 11 pitchers this year to injury, Tampa Bay has jumped way ahead of the Yankees. And because the Yankees aren't going to get healthy in the next 4 weeks, Tampa Bay is probably going to go into the playoffs better than the Yankees. Now, does it matter at all this year? No, they just announced this week that Major League's postseason, the American League is going to be in Los Angeles and San Diego, and the National League is going to be in Texas. So they're going to bubble the playoffs in 2 separate places, and it's just not going to matter at all, who gets the better records. Now, we'll talk about the Padres at some point, because why wouldn't I want to keep talking about the Padres? It's the thing I nerd out about the most, despite the fact that I hate listening to Miami Heat fans and Boston Celtics fans nerd out about their basketball teams being up in their series. That's a whole nother conversation. I do wish the radio show was going on during basketball games, because I would just break in with commentary in the middle of games instead of what we have now, where I can just tell you that the Pirates have the bases loaded with 2 outs in the bottom of the 6th. And I think Gregory Polanco is up. I'm not exactly sure, though. But I digress. The Rays and the Yankees have been going back and forth because for years, Tampa Bay has been nicknamed Bronx South. Is that the Yankees go to Tampa Bay, and apart from one Evan Longoria walk-off in 2013, they beat the crap out of the Rays and prove big brother, little brother rivalry. Tampa Bay doesn't have the money. They play down in Florida with no fans in the stadium, not just because of a pandemic. There's no fans in the stadium normally. They've got this wacky dome stadium where the ball gets stuck at the top of the dome, and then it drops in play, and somehow they get a double. It's really weird. It makes no sense. And the Yankees dominate the Tampa Bay Rays. Even if the Tampa Bay Rays are super innovative, it still doesn't close the gap. Tampa Bay hasn't won the American League East since 2010. This year will break that. But Tampa Bay is still in this position of power where they are better than the Yankees, and they're not afraid to tell the Yankees that they are, including beating them, I believe, 2 out of 3 over this week when they traveled up to the Bronx. And so Tampa Bay is in this position where now the Yankees are throwing at Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay is coming back at the Yankees, and Aroldis Chapman and bench clearing brawls, and then the manager of Tampa Bay inflaming it by saying, "I got a bullpen full of guys that throw 98 and insinuating violence against the New York Yankees. And I always love these baseball brawls for three reasons. One, the archaic nature of throwing baseballs at one another. Two, the fact that, like, they go out to brawl, and what happens is they all stand in a circle for, like, 6 minutes and just kind of, like, banter back and forth a little bit. And I shouldn't even say 6 minutes. It's more like 2 minutes. They just kind of banter back and forth. They all run out of the dugout. They all run out of the bullpen, and they just kind of stand in a circle. And number three is that when there are baseball fights, they are legit baseball fights. I'm talking dude for the A's charging the entire Astros bench. I'm talking Amir Garrett charging the entire Astros bench. The entire Pirates bench. I'm talking Yasiel Puig and the amazing photo of him taking on 10 Pittsburgh Pirates at one time. And this is the kind of thing that we're finding where there's this banter back and forth, but damn it if it isn't a fun story to watch the Tampa Bay Rays and the New York Yankees battling back and forth and back and forth. It's really fun to watch all of that play out. And so if you're a fan of the Yankees, you're probably not taking much of an eye to this. And if you're a fan of the Tampa Bay Rays, it means so much to you that you're better than the Yankees. How do I know this? Because I'm a San Diego Padres fan. And for the first time in my memorable lifetime, I'm 19 years old. My earliest baseball memory was in 2007 when the Padres lost to the Colorado Rockies in a game 163, and the Colorado Rockies went to the World Series. The Padres have not made the playoffs since then. They haven't really came back close, apart from 1 year in 2010, since then. But they're good. They're good this year. And they're going to make the playoffs. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about that. The question is whether they can win the World Series. They got three shots at that, 2020, 2021, and 2022. And if you listen to the podcast consistently, you know I've been insinuating for a while that, hey, the Padres are really good, and hey, we just traded for Austin Nola and traded for Mike Clevinger and traded for Mitch Moreland, and we're going for it. But I've never really gotten the chance, apart from that 20 minutes that I nerded out on Sunday with our buddy Bill Thompson, to talk deep in depth about the Padres myself. There's a lot of Bill talking and me filling in the gaps, and then Mike Clevinger's trade happened, and it just set the world on fire. And in about 3 hours, Mike Clevinger is going to pitch for the first time for the Padres, and I know there's going to be a Toronto-Boston Game 3, and I know there's going to be a Miami-Milwaukee Game 3 tomorrow, and I know there's going to be a Nuggets-Clippers game tonight, and I know there's two NHL Game 6s. I get it. There's so many freaking sports games to watch. But tonight's going to be a Padres night for me because I really, really want to watch Mike Clevinger pitch for the Padres. And I can't stop watching this team because I have a good team for the first time in my memorable lifetime. It just means more because the Padres are a really good team. Honestly, I enjoy talking about the Bucks, and I might get into Giannis in the future there in a bit. I like talking about the Bucks, but I just love talking about the Padres. I can't get enough of it. Under normal circumstances, I'd be phasing baseball out at this point and getting ready for football season. But now football season starts a week from today. The next time we're on the radio, it's going to be hours away from the opening night of football, which I feel like I haven't talked about very much on the radio show. I think because I talk about it on the podcast, and so the radio show is a chance to talk about the things that I normally wouldn't talk about on the podcast. I do really enjoy the platform of this and having the more radio talk versus what it would be on the podcast, which is kind of like 30 minutes on a particular topic. So now I can talk all about the Rays and the Yankees and the Padres and, you know, Giannis in the future there. And last week, talk about fires and Black Lives Matter and things of that sort, just freely and openly and just, you know, banter a little bit. So I digress once again. The Padres are in it to win it for the first time in my life, and it's all that I want to watch. Now, I do want to watch this game six tonight between the Flyers and Islanders. And look, it's not going to make a ton of sense to people listening on Saturday because you're already going to know the result, or you just don't care about hockey. You're going to know the result of game seven by then between the Dallas Stars and the Colorado Avalanche, which is going to be a really good game seven. Game sevens in hockey are intense. With or without fans, they are intense. And I hate myself right now as I'm talking because I mentioned the idea of fans and the fact that it makes a difference. It's a classic sports radio thing, and I don't like talking about that because it's the same thing. Like, it changes the antics, like the fact that Miami can go up 2-0, but it's not doing it in front of Milwaukee because – you know, seven players on the Heat went in double figures yesterday, and it's not going to make that much of a difference because, oh, we're watching Tyler Hero do this, and we're watching Goran Dragic go for 20-whatever points. And it doesn't matter which place you're in. It's just the fact that we're watching basketball in this form. It's a different game than what we were anticipating only because role players play better at home than on the road. And now you've removed that altogether. So you're seeing less of a home court advantage, obviously, which also scorecasting. I was going to talk about this on the radio show too. Scorecasting. It's a great book. I would recommend reading it if you're a sports fan. Scorecasting tells us the only home court advantage is referees making decisions because they are in an environment where it's like the fans are right on top of them. So referees will maybe swallow their whistle here and there, and they'll be less wanting to give calls to the home team, not because of anything they're doing intentionally, but because they are subconsciously just human and don't want to be hated on and don't want to be spat on by the people watching them. So scorecasting tells us referees make up all of home court advantage. Now in basketball, we also have statistics to tell us that role players play better at home than on the road. And now you've removed that. So you're getting more even matchups than you would normally have versus home court advantage. You noticed that yesterday in the Miami-Milwaukee game because people were mad about those two calls at the end of the game, which I always say the same thing. I think Tate kind of began from that Rams-Saints game where there was the pass interference call at the end of the game that got everyone riled up and Roger Goodell was hiding under his desk for five straight days waiting until it was safe to come out. That moment just made me realize, look, bad calls are part of it. The referees missed a face mask on the Saints on Jared Goff that would have ended up in a rushing touchdown, but instead he got tackled. They had to kick a field goal. So field goal, touchdown, there you go right there. Just takes away the points there, plus Drew Brees threw a pick in overtime. So same thing with the one yesterday. Middleton, Dragic, look, part of the game. Fouls are going to happen. People who didn't like the drama of Jimmy Butler going to the free throw line with no time on the clock, never seen it before. I don't know if it's ever happened in a playoff game. I don't know what the deal is, but never seen it before. And you live with it. I would have liked to have seen overtime, but I live with it. And I don't know. I'm going to send this to the one guy who keeps spamming me on Miami Heat stuff because I said, yeah, the Bucks are going to win in five. And he's like, look at Miami. I told you so. They're up 2-0. I'm like, I don't care if I'm wrong. It's just baffling to see it happen to Giannis. Which, before I talk about this again, if you're listening to the podcast today on Open Talk, this is going to make a whole lot of sense because the series is 2-0. If you're listening on Saturday on the Take It Easy podcast feed, It's going to make a whole lot more sense if they're up 3-0, but it's not going to make as much sense if the series is 2-1. Giannis might have pre-agency coming up. And for those who aren't familiar with pre-agency is players like Anthony Davis, like Jimmy Butler, like Chris Paul when he went to the Rockets in the first place, like Kyrie Irving, like Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard actually got a championship for Toronto out of it. And just a total, like, amazing postseason that happened when Kawhi Leonard just dominated everyone, or dominated Giannis, and then semi-dominated the Warriors that didn't have Kevin Durant. And that was the storyline, was how the Warriors lost and not how the Raptors won. And a big part of it actually in Game 6 was Kyle Lowry hitting 12 points to start the game. I digress. So that's pre-agency, is guys 1 to 2 years before their contract expires forcing their way out of the situation they're in because they have no intentions of signing a long-term contract with the team that they currently play for. Anthony Davis was the one was the big one this offseason, and Kawhi was the big one the offseason before, and then Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler and Chris Paul. It's happened over the last few years in a post-decision world where player empowerment is LeBron James's legacy more than anything else, is that LeBron James made the game mobile the way Jordan made it global, the way Larry and Magic saved the game. LeBron made the NBA mobile, which set up Kevin Durant in 2016 to lead for Golden State, which set up Kawhi Leonard to go to the Clippers in 2019, which sets up 10 months from now, at most, Giannis Antetokounmpo's departure from the Milwaukee Bucks. And I talk about this in no uncertain terms. I will cry if Giannis stays with the Bucks. It's just so awful to think about Giannis having his career wasted with that Milwaukee team. Giannis might be headed to pre-agency. Vincent Goodwin for Yahoo.com put out a great story on Thursday about how it is an open secret within NBA circles. Giannis is interested in Miami and Toronto to join in 2021. And this is not surprising to me. Those two teams made the most sense. Second and third on my list, number one was Dallas. Dallas makes the most sense for Giannis to me. Then Miami and Toronto make sense. And then Golden State and the Knicks and all the teams that are going to say they're in it, but they're not actually in it for Giannis. But the Warriors can make a trade. The Warriors can go acquire Giannis a year before his free agency. That's what free agency is. Is Giannis informing the Bucks, look, I don't have intentions of re-signing here. I'm not asking for a trade, or maybe I am asking for a trade. I don't think Giannis would ask for a trade. I think he genuinely wants to play with the Bucks again in 2021. And he's kind of getting out in front and saying, look, I'm not going to re-up, but I want to keep playing with the Bucks. And the Bucks are going to say, well, we can't lose you for nothing. We're going to have to make a deal. Especially with 1 year left for that guy, they're going to need to make a deal. A la Kawhi Leonard, a la Anthony Davis, even though Anthony Davis is for sure going to re-up with the Lakers. That was the whole point of his pre-agency, was to force his way to the Lakers. And they got his wish and sent all of those young players to the boarding school in New Orleans. And shout out to Jorge Sedano for that one. That was a really good joke that I heard. I had to pass it along. So Giannis is in this position where his pre-agency could be predetermined. And of course, he's going to give the Bucks a list of teams and say, well, if you're going to trade me, you know, I would consider re-signing with Miami and I'd consider re-signing with Toronto. And the price instantly goes up for Miami and Toronto. And I also think the Warriors would pay a premium to acquire Giannis. Why? Because the Warriors have so many bleeping assets, like so many available assets. Now, would the Bucks want to build a team around Draymond Green, Andrew Wiggins, and Chris Middleton? That's a good question. I don't know. I would say probably not. I think they'd prefer the number two pick in the draft with you know, an array of other future assets. But then again, there are only five good teams in the East, and if you take away the Bucks, there's only four good teams in the East. It's Miami, it's Toronto. Even Toronto's not going to be as good next year. It's like Miami and Boston and there are no good teams in the Eastern Conference. Brooklyn's going to get KD and Kyrie back. So you've got Brooklyn, maybe Philadelphia, Chicago, and Miami. Like, those are the teams of the future in the Eastern Conference. And the Bucks rolling it back next year keeps them alive a little bit. But even Toronto is going to be like a 4 or 5 seed first or second round exit next year. They're going to get knocked out in the second round this year. And pure, I love the fact that they added, this is just a quick side note as a joke, I love that Toronto added Kawhi, instantly won a title, and then the second Kawhi left, it just instantly became Toronto again. Like, we can just interchange the pieces, and they'll always be good enough to get eliminated in the second round. Like, it can be DeRozan and Lowry and Valanciunas, and then it can be, VanVleet and Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol and OG Anunoby and Siakam. Like, you can just interchange the pieces and always get knocked out in the second round the way they did every year, except for the one magical season that they got one of the three best players in the sport in Kawhi Leonard. So the Raptors are going to be in that purgatory the way the Nuggets are in the Western Conference. And then Giannis controls all the chips here, because if the Celtics and Heat make the Eastern Conference Finals like it's shaping up to be right now, those two teams are the future of the conference. And that was with or without them making the Conference Finals, because the teams that finished at the regular season at the top, the Bucks and the Raptors are on borrowed time right now. The dynasty was supposed to be done after Kawhi Leonard left and they weren't able to replace him. The Raptors are on borrowed time this season and all the seasons down the road. And as you're seeing in the playoffs right now, it looks like they're going to succumb to the up-and-coming Boston Celtics. And Milwaukee's time is finite. Milwaukee's got a very finite date on this run. And it's 2021, July 1st. Because at that point, you've lost Giannis. And the Bucks become irrelevant again, which is where pre-agency comes into play. I did not think Giannis would hit pre-agency. I also didn't think Giannis would lose in the second round of the playoffs to the Miami Heat, or at least be down 2-0. I'm still picking the Bucks to win, and I'm going to keep picking the Bucks until the Bucks are eliminated altogether. Why? Because the Bucks are better than the Miami Heat. So Giannis is in this interesting position where his future is going to be tied nearly entirely to his own preferences. Where does he want to play? Who does he want to play for? And most importantly, what other stars does he want to play with? If he does pre-agency, it's just going to totally rock the NBA landscape this offseason. Like, it's going to be back-to-back years where it's just 2020, the November of Giannis, the December of Giannis, whenever we actually have free agency, and summer 2021, the summer of Giannis. Like, whatever Giannis wants to do, Giannis is going to get. He holds all the leverage, as all these superstars do. As we just saw last year, Kawhi Leonard can literally force Oklahoma City, which actually helped Oklahoma City, and I said it at the time that this actually helped Oklahoma City because they got 12 more draft picks than they would have had they blown up the Paul George Westbrook experiment this offseason. They got 12 more draft picks than they would have actually gotten out of that. So here you are with Giannis controlling all the chips, and he'll get whatever he wants in this situation. He'll either tell the Bucks, look, we're going to have to play this out till free agency. I want to have one more shot with this team. Or he'll tell them, look, I have no intentions of re-signing here. Or he'll sign. The third option that's not going to happen is Giannis signs a long-term extension with the Bucks. That's just not going to happen. it's just not going to happen. Like, no question about it. And so I would be baffled if we actually get a free agency out of this, but it doesn't surprise me that much that we're having this conversation. Now, the reason I'm talking about this is because I'm hearing it. Like, what if Giannis goes this offseason? And Vincent Goodwin talking about it for Yahoo is like, hey, Giannis has an open secret. It's like, yeah, his whole tone changed following the 2019 NBA season. The whole tone of Giannis is, hey, I'm going to wait it out, focused on the season. We're not going to answer any questions about future intentions until after the season is over, which was different than his I'm a Buck for life, which he was saying back in like 2016. That was before he was a two-time MVP. Now he's looking at greener pastures and saying, look, I can't do that. I can't sign myself up for five more years of this, especially with Chris Middleton aging out of his prime and having that ridiculously massive contract on the books. And so here are the Bucks in this position, down 0-2 or maybe down 3-0 or maybe down 1-2 at this point. And I didn't think Giannis would hit free agency. I also didn't think they'd be losing to the Miami Heat 2-0 at this point. Now, I'm not going to do a Heat-Celtics conference final preview. It's just too weird and too early. I'm still riding with the Bucks until I can no longer pick the Bucks anymore. And that includes the possibility of the Bucks coming back from down 3-0 to win that series. Because if it's ever going to happen in NBA history, it's going to happen year in this series that a team comes back from down 3-0. I'm not even going to count them out at that point. I'm going to keep picking the Bucks until the Bucks are gone from the playoffs. Because I was preaching, and I still am preaching, even if my confidence is totally shaken on the Bucks side, I'm still preaching that Milwaukee, Los Angeles, and the other Los Angeles, Kawhi, LeBron, and Giannis are the three storylines in the NBA bubble. And if the Bucks don't make it to the NBA Finals, Giannis is about to become a whole bigger storyline than we previously had him pinned for. Rangers cut the lead to 3. They still trail the Astros 6-3. It is the bottom of the 7th. The Phillies are up 2-0 on the Washington Nationals. This is just kind of a fun thing for people who listen to the podcast, is that I was doing a podcast episode on the Washington Nationals and about how everything blew up for them. And then I looked at the standings, and the Washington Nationals were like a 2 games of the last playoff spot. I was like, this is not going to go well if the Nationals do end up getting this ship righted and actually make a playoff run. And now we're 2 weeks removed from that. I'm like, ha-ha, the Nationals suck. It's the Phillies and the Marlins that somehow dominate the National League East. And then you've got the crappy NL Central. And there's really only two good teams in the National League. It's the Padres and it's the Dodgers. And damn it, if I ain't happy about that situation. There's another COVID situation out there in in Oakland, which is really interesting to follow, especially if more games start getting postponed as you get closer. Like we said before, they finally have they've got a bubble scenario planned out for baseball, which is going to be really fun and really interesting as everything progresses. And so it'll be fun to watch as all of that plays out. Also, I would keep paying attention to what is going on in California, because fires are still ongoing, and I would look out for the people out there. Again, air quality is improving. I talked to you last week about it, and I didn't get a chance to come back to it. But again, fires here, hurricanes going on, and also everything going on in Kenosha, Wisconsin, as well as we talked about on Tuesday, what is going on in South LA right now after Dejan Kizzy was shot by police 15 to 20 times in South LA, and then his body left at the scene of the murder in handcuffs for roughly 6.5 hours. as protests began all up and down that area. I stopped paying a lot of attention to news media and reading articles because fear-mongering is all over the place at this point. The fear-mongering is, like, real at this point, and, you know, I'm getting exhausted by everything going on, and I would advise everyone else to pay attention to these things and continue to push forward. Now, there is another Washington racial slurs story out here, and look, I haven't been able to read it yet. It was just dropped actually right as we got on the air here at about 12 o'clock, so about an hour before. There is further details of a Washington racial slurs story involving Dan Snyder, involving misogyny, sexual harassment, and belittlement among both Dan Snyder and the owners of the team. Jeremy Schapp was talking about how this is a direct quote here from this. I haven't been able to read through the whole thing. It's hard working there, referencing the Washington racial slurs. You just know that depending on the certain way you dress, there's going to be comments made about what you're wearing, how you look. When you walk through the office, you're just kind of waiting for the comments to come from male colleagues. I would get inappropriate comments about my hair, outfit, how I looked in public in front of my own clients. This is an intern who worked at the Washington racial slurs back in 2010. And also details a story of a Washington racial slurs player following her to her car after repeatedly asking her out. And male colleagues basically saying, and this is coming from the Washington Post article from last week, the idea of it's a, quote, male-dominated industry, and that women in these positions either had to quit their jobs or just avoid the people who were harassing them, which, as she details in this story, apparently, how do you do that when someone's following you out to your car in these situations? And I've talked about this before. The reason that Dan Snyder is keeping his team, despite the fact that in previous circumstances the things we're talking about justify the removal of a team, it's kind of the same reason Mark Cuban kept his team, but for different reasons, because of Mark Cuban's political leanings and celebrity personality and the fact that he showed remorse, however sincere it was, after his incident that didn't get a lot of media coverage about being fined $2.5 million and being forced to readdress the culture situation, which from all the indications we're seeing from this Dan Snyder story, it's not possible for that to be the case without the owner having being the leader on these things, not leader in terms of the actual incidents that are being talked about, but about leading the culture and accepting these things and allowing them to go without any repercussions. Because this is the same thing we're talking about when we talk about police in this country, is that the reason they can keep killing people, specifically black people, but also other minority groups, the reason they can keep killing people and arresting people in this country is the fact that there have been no repercussions in the past. And because there have been no repercussions, people tell them in the streets, this is wrong, stop killing black people. The reason it's going to keep happening is because where are the repercussions? You can say something, but until you see the repercussions, they're going to keep killing black people. They're also going to start killing white people as they continue protesting and getting shot with rubber bullets or armed right-wing militias going in and killing two people in Wisconsin, which has gotten way too much media attention. Yet at the same time as also so last week, it's really weird how this works in America in terms of the news that's not actually a free press. I like to make the joke that we have free and open oppress because your mental thoughts and your processing of media images are totally being oppressed by the media images that you see, both from conservative right-wing media and from traditional media that, as I've learned as all these protests have gone on, are just blatantly fear-mongering in order to keep people in a certain line and be afraid. Because fear-mongering gets people into a certain alignment. It gets people into a certain position of this is how you're supposed to go. And it's real journalism, like what you're seeing by outside the lines of ESPN and the Washington Post, where they don't put things out unless it's vetted with 110% accuracy. They won't post it. So it's why following investigative journalism like this is more important than your day-to-day opinion columnist. I digress because we were talking about the Washington racial slurs and how Washington and Dan Snyder is going to keep his job because for the same reason that police keep their jobs after killing black people, they don't view this as a problem. Despite the fact that Mark Cuban and Dan Snyder oversaw toxic cultures within their organization, the reasons that they keep the job, the reason Mark Cuban kept his job, as I said before, his status as celebrity owner, his status as a liberal, and the fact that he showed remorse in these situations are among the reasons that he gets to keep his team. Dan Snyder's situation is only because they don't view this as a problem, which, like I just said, when it came to police, they don't view killing black people as a problem. They think it's okay to kill black people because there are no repercussions for this. That's where you have to create the change that fixes this exact issue. Now, real systemic change, as I've talked about before, how do you fix something that is ingrained into the foundation of what it is that you're talking about? How do you fix the Washington racial slurs when the foundation of the organization is rooted in misogyny? Well, what ends up happening is you have to, as most places would, if you have a building where the foundation is flawed, you knock down the building and you build it up again. Or you keep the foundation there and try and keep the whole building supported while you go through a complicated, messy restructuring. Or you just knock it down. There's a reason that the other way doesn't work very much. And it works even less when you have people resisting to the change. And by people, I mean like 45% of people in the country. So with Washington, how do you fix something that is the foundation of what we're talking about? Well, when it came to the Dallas Mavericks, they let Mark Cuban have like two strikes, you're on your third strike, try and rebuild the entire foundation of what it is you're talking about. And Mark Cuban is capable of changing his views of the world and capable of adapting to current environments and adapting to what is necessary for his business. Something I think Dan Snyder is guilty of not being able to do, not being able to adapt under any circumstances, not being able to give up the short-term dopamine hits of short-term gains at long-term losses and using that as a sustainable business model. And why wouldn't he? It helped him become a billionaire owner. So he has his biggest flaw is that his inability is to adapt. And that's kind of what the conservative mantra is. And the traditional mantra is that traditionalism is trying to prevent adaptation, keep things the way they are, which doesn't work, but still finds us in a position of power. So here we are. If you have to take down the foundation, what we're talking about is removing the foundation, which is knocking out Dan Snyder and building it back up from scratch with a new owner. That's what knocking the foundation is. Or they're not going to adapt and you have the same rickety building for the rest of time, embarrassing the league and Washington as a whole, and might end up relocating sooner than later because they just don't want Washington there anymore. And for the NFL, they have no incentive to remove Dan Snyder because, again, a lot of these owners agree, unlike the NBA, a lot of these owners agree with Dan Snyder's ideology and Dan Snyder's principles. It just gets to a point where you're like, why do you have to keep embarrassing us? The second there's an incentive for these owners to remove Dan Snyder, they will remove Dan Snyder. It's the same thing that happened with Donald Sterling. It's the same thing that's happening with Delroy Hansen at Real Salt Lake in the MLS. We talked about that on Monday's episode of the Take It Easy podcast. And so what you're finding when it comes to America, this Washington story, whatever you want to do, when the foundation is flawed, this is why defund the police is becoming a thing. It's why Cal Berkeley, one of the more progressive radical, I put those in quotation marks because it's not really radical. It's just very different. The reason that they are partaking in things like no PD by December 31st of 2021, they are totally reinventing the way we do public safety, as Minnesota will be doing over the next 3 years. No police by 2021. The reason they do that is recognizing that the police system in America was founded on racism. It is at the foundation. Police were founded following the establishment of the country as slave catchers. And it has continued in a perpetuation that leads to mass incarceration and leads to things killing black people and juries that are all white convicting black people. Is that the system is set up that way. Police and law enforcement in this country are flawed at the foundation. So you tear it down and build it back up. Otherwise, you're just continuing the same thing that it's always been. And to be fair, 50% of the country wants that. But I would argue that 50% all looks very similar to each other and has an ideology very similar to each other. But 50% of the country does not want it to change. They want that rickety foundation. They look at it and say, this is fine. Or they look at it and say, this is the best building I've ever seen. Or they look at it and say, a day in this building, the worst possible day in this building is better than any day in any other place, they say as a slab of concrete falls and hits them on the foot. And that's why you don't have the changes, because one in every two people look at that and say, this foundation is fine. But it's not fine. It's not fine in Washington. It's not fine in Dallas. It's not fine in our police force. It's not fine in our political establishments. It's not fine in our corporate establishments, in corporate America, who's the actual leaders of the country. And it's not fine in America as a whole, because America itself is flawed at its foundation. The system is not broken. The system is working exactly the way it's supposed to. The exact same thing with the Washington racial slurs. The foundation is working exactly the way it's supposed to. It is, as Stephen Choi, the COO of the Redskins, or the racial slurs, said, damn it, I messed it up. I try not to say that anymore, but I will bleep that out later, maybe on the podcast version. As Stephen Choi, COO of the racial slurs, says, it is a male-dominated industry. The Washington racial slurs work the way the Washington racial slurs are supposed to work. And America works the way America is supposed to work. And they're flawed at the foundation. And how do you fix the foundation? You're either going to have to tear it down and build it up again. You're going to have to try and fix the foundation while not tearing down the building itself, which is just really hard. And if it doesn't work exactly the way it's supposed to with a drawn-out plan, with an ability to be flexible in the short term and make different decisions on the fly, which 50% of our country, really no, 75% of our country is totally incapable of doing that. Again, this is not fact. It's just ballparking it. There's no way to guarantee what the numbers are, but I do know 76% of people in America don't like the job that they work in. And I also know 76% of people would define their day-to-day habits as unhealthy. There's 76% of people in this country wake up and go to a job that they do not love. They hate their – I think the word they used was hate their job. Well, if you hate your job, why are you doing it? And then this gets into a whole other conversation about who gets opportunity in this country and who has to just make their money and try and survive and privilege and all these different things, which are extremely valid when you get into the nuance. But I'd argue we know the trend of people who are unhappy. It's at least 75%. I'd argue at most like – or at least 50% and at most 75% of people are like truly incapable – of critical thinking and adapting on the fly. Why do I know this? Look at who they vote for in politics. And so you're in this position where you can either tear it all down, adapt on the fly, and try and restructure the foundation with new and innovative strategies, or you can leave the building exactly as it is and say, hey, we're all good here. We're chilling. I don't know how many years it's going to take for everything to fall apart, but I don't know if I'm going to see it in my lifetime. It will happen eventually. How do I know this? It's happened to every single dynasty in all of human history. So it's going to happen to America. This is not an anti-America thing. This is just going to happen. And so where you stand now, as you watch structural foundations of America become into question. And again, number one reason I love sports, sports reflect society. And when we talk about real issues like misogyny, like women's empowerment in male-dominated industries, that in air quotes, male-dominated industries, as Stephen Choi of the Washington Racial Slurs put it, as we talk about gender issues, women's rights, and women being in positions of power, sports is actually a really good window into that because sports are one of the last industries that are correcting this. The fact that we're talking about these stories within the Washington racial slurs in 2020 should be crazy to most people. Now, most people aren't finding these crazy because 50% of people don't view this as a problem. Or if they do, they're not willing to do anything about it. They just say, this is a problem. And they post a black square to their Instagram story, and then they go hoorah on with their day. But when it comes down to real physical action in these cases, like putting women in positions of power and hiring women in positions of power and voting for women in elected office, nowhere to be found. They say one thing and don't act on another thing. And so now you're in this position where we're talking a big game in sports, and we're talking a big game across America. And so Washington puts you in a position where the racial slurs can be a mirror for society. Sports reflect society like a mirror. It's why the NBA, as Dan Le Batard so eloquently put it, has become a political organization, and they've become a powerful political organization. Sports reflect society. We cannot ignore this fact. And so it's actually really cool when you think about it in that context. It's really cool to think about sports as they reflect society in these contexts. And so you watch the Washington racial slurs and the power that Dan Snyder has abused over his tenure. And then you can correlate it to the football team and see the problems that you have there and the short-term gains sacrificing long-term plans for short-term gains. Dan Snyder, as you read in the Washington Post article, I would encourage you to read both of them and also whatever this story is with ESPN that I just read a few direct quotes from a synopsis. Dan Snyder fired the guy who told him you need long-term gains over short-term profits, fired the guy and said, we're going to go back to the way things have always been. And when that happened, 14 people quit their job the next day or within the next week. So Dan Snyder has told you he has no interest in actually having a culture change. This was in 2018. He has no intention of a culture change. And even if he wanted to, he doesn't know what that means. And this is what you're saying. When the foundation is flawed, you have to either adapt on the fly, changing preconceived notions you've had your entire life, or you can stick with what you know, ride it out with the creaky foundation until eventually it collapses on you. And when it collapses, you just pivot to the next thing that you're going through. How do you know this? It happened during the 2008 financial crisis. As soon as the banks collapsed and got bailed out by the American people, immediately began pivoting to payday loans, buying and selling apartments, which is going to happen at a much higher rate as evictions turn up soon. You're going to start seeing big companies buying those. You're going to see them buying small newspapers and laying off staff, as it's already begun in America. You're going to start to see just pivot to the next thing. When the foundation collapses on the building because you refuse to innovate and change and really build up a new, better building, as soon as it collapses, you just move on to the next thing, the next new shiny object. And that'll be what Dan Snyder does the day he sells the team or is forced to sell the team or whatever situation comes. I'm not sure what it'll be. But that's what short-term gains do to you over long-term benefits. We're going to see that happen with Washington. And long-term fights take, as the connotation says, a long time. I don't know when that building is collapsing. It's going to happen at some point. I just don't know whether or not that building is going to collapse in our lifetime. And by that building, I'm not talking about Washington or police in America or housing bubbles or newspaper bubbles. Newspapers have already gone downhill, except for the few productions that are still in place, keeping people accountable and keeping the general masses more informed. But you're also going to see a downtrot in America of all these different people in positions of power, and you're just going to pivot to the next thing. As things fall, you just pivot to the next thing, pivot to the next thing. Leave it in shambles. Let it be someone else's problem to deal with. And just pivot to the next big shiny object that's going to help you achieve whatever goal it is that you hope to achieve. Rangers cutting that lead a little bit here. I'm telling you, the Rangers are cutting down on that lead. They got one more inning to try, and the Yankees are blowing out the Mets. I feel bad for the Mets. I really do feel bad for the Mets. I mean, it's just an unfortunate situation to be in with selling the team and obviously the what's happened in the past with the Bernie Madoff situation and not being able to pay anybody, and so there are a lot of unfortunate situations going on here with the New York Mets, but it's always fun to laugh at the Mets because they give you a nice little entertaining story every single time that you follow them. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to today's episode of Take It Easy. If you're listening here on the podcast, check out Open Talk Radio, 313 The Flash. Subscribe, download, all the good stuff that you can do there. If you're listening on Open Talk, we do episodes every single day, Monday through Friday. Sunday is wired up. Saturday is this podcast being put out over the air. If you want the exclusive podcast or the exclusive radio episode, you can obviously get it here in the days leading up and checking us out live at 4 p.m. Eastern time every single day on Blog Talk Radio, 313 The Flash. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Be on the lookout for all different kinds of stuff here on 313 The Flash. We'll be back next week. Oh, it'll be NFL opening week, strange enough, and we'll know whether the Bucks are done with their 2020 season. Thank you, everybody, and have a great day.